Welcome into another edition of the Dan and Victory Podcast, only on MusketeerReport.com. I'm Rick, he's Dan, and tonight we're joined by special guest, national recruiting analyst at Scout.com, and general friend of the podcast, Brian Snow. Guys, how are you?
You know, I'm great. I'm sitting here in beautiful Indianapolis, and there's nothing I'd rather do than be talking to you right now, Rick.
I appreciate that, Brian. Dan, how are you?
I'm doing well. Rick, I understand you're going to Key West this weekend, so obviously you have better things to do than talk to us on this podcast.
Episode 21, I struggled with this today, but I'm going to go with James Brooks, former Bengal great.
I have some appreciation for that, Dan. That's pretty well done.
It's a good National Signing Day reference because I think James Brooks got through 4 years at Auburn without learning how to read. So
yeah, I was about to mention that. Like, well done on James Brooks getting through Auburn without being able to read. Congratulations to that fine university.
Well, there you have it. So it was signing day today on the football side of things, and for some reason we were talking about Ole Miss today all day long, which was kind of uncomfortable in general. But that being said, we kind of want to start this podcast by talking about this current Xavier team. And when you look at the makeup of this roster, if Xavier could have signing day right now and sign any type of new player to join this roster, what would we want? I mean, what would be that? What would this team need the most? And we're kind of all going to give our take on that.
Kobe Bryant. Kobe Bryant.
LeBron James isn't in the conversation. By the way, you can't go like cheat mode and hybrid all of them together. So I'll start off, and with this team, to me, more than anything, I know we talk about their lack of scoring, and everyone wants someone that can shoot the ball from the outside. I think more than anything, they need a guy who can create his own shot. Obviously, you'd prefer a wing at this point with the current roster. They have Travis Taylor inside. They have Samaje in the backcourt. It'd be nice to have a three that could really create his own shot because they have guys on this team right now that can finish shots in Travis Taylor. You know, Justin Martin, theoretically, if he's making jump shots. Brad Redford, if he's making jump shots. You know, maybe even D. Davis in that conversation because he's kind of the best shooter on the team right now. I'd say that they need another guy who can go out and get a bucket and create things. Brian, what would you say?
You know, much along that line, it's got to be a wing and someone who can defend. I mean, Xavier doesn't give up points except for when Justin Martin gets fried off the dribble and their defense has to collapse. So I think if you have an athletic 6'5" wing, you know, it's going to be a guy who provides something different on the offensive end. Let's assume he can dribble. And then on the defensive end fills a role that, you know, like Landon Amos can defend. There's no question about that. But he can't dribble at all or make a layup or dunk. So, you know, you give up a lot.
I actually would agree with that, Brian. I think what X really needs is they really could use is like a 6'3", 6'4", 6'5", wing type player that can handle the ball, that can defend, and that's really athletic and also shows a little bit of touch outside 18 feet. So if you've heard of anybody like that, that maybe is playing for Maryland, let me know.
I was about to say I can think of one person, but after this week, I don't think I'm allowed to mention his name.
No, but I think the bigger issue is this. We had this conversation a little bit on the message board, I think. I think X needs somebody. I don't know if it has to be somebody that can create their own shot, but they need somebody who they can rely on to hit threes and who can get themselves open a little bit. I think that's the biggest thing this team is missing, because if there's one thing that we've seen in college basketball recently, it's that teams that can make threes in volume can stay in games even if they suck at everything else. And I'll give you a case in point. That St. Joe's team for the first 35 minutes against Xavier was awful. But they hit, what, 8-9 threes to keep themselves in that game. They knocked down a few shots at the end, and they put the Musketeers away. You know, Richmond was another team. Richmond hit a ton of threes in that game and didn't really do anything else of much consequence. If you can keep hoisting those shots up and enough of them go down, you'll stay in any game that you're in, unless you're playing, you know, one of the elite teams in the country, I guess.
Well, I don't disagree with you, but I also think there's a little bit too much emphasis placed on just the actual skill of shooting and not enough of appreciation at times for how guys get good looks and how guys knock down those shots. Most of these guys at the Division I level can make an open three. I mean, Justin Martin has missed plenty of them, yes, but theoretically, he is a guy who can knock down shots. D. Davis can knock down shots. The problem is when Xavier needs a bucket, they really have to focus on one guy to create those shots, and that's Samaje Christen. Those other guys that can possibly make a three, you're right, Dan. They don't know how to get open. They can't physically get open. And the fact that they can't do anything else, they're not going to attack you off the dribble for closing out too hard, makes it so that it's pretty easy to kind of lock those guys up in crunch time when X needs to score. We've seen how many games have come down to final possessions with this team. If they had one more guy, to me, most of college basketball and basketball really in general is getting the defense to move and putting them at a disadvantage to where they have to scramble. And Xavier can't do that enough with this roster because of the simple fact that there's only one guy who really makes things happen off the bounce.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, you look at a guy like Nick Stauskas at Michigan. First of all, he's not as good a shooter number-wise as people want to think he is. He's shooting like 37% since the first month of the season. But he can play a little bit off of a closeout. Brad Redford cannot. So I know all these fans, oh, you got to get Redford shots. You got to do. Well, teams close out to him at a ridiculous level that they'd never close out to another guy on a basketball court. And Brad can't do anything. He just ball reversals. That's right. The biggest difference in what Xavier needs. And that's what a guy like Miles Davis brings next year, is Miles Davis can play off a closeout. Brad Redford cannot.
Well, you mentioned Miles Davis, Brian, and then, of course, today, as we talked about in the New Musketeer report, there's another name that has surfaced potentially for the 2013 class. Xavier might not be done there. And this one, Mac went a long way to get. He was over in Europe this week taking a look at Alexander Vezenkov. Is that even close to being pronounced right, Brian?
I think that's right.
Who you ask?
I figured you were kind of like the expert on foreign pronunciation.
Yeah, I thought Snow got his degree in Bulgarian culture and civilization at Ohio State.
I'm not sure I got a degree.
In all honesty, that might be the class that Matt Stainbrook is currently teaching on campus at the Cintas Center. But, Brian, as far as what can you tell us about this? I mean, I posted on the message board sort of the basics. I've never seen the kid. You've never seen the kid. But what have we been told, and what do we know about sort of what went on with Mac watching him this week?
Yeah, the first thing I want to make clear is he could be better than LeBron James or the worst player in the history of basketball. So I'm not making any sort of grand proclamation on how good this kid is or isn't. That said, you know, from talking to – I know a couple guys who run the NBA draft website type stuff, and they do some work in Europe, and I hit them, and he's a young kid who's playing up. You know, he played U-20 basketball, which is like three or four age levels higher than he should have, and he held his own. And, you know, when he did play, I think, U-16 World Championship, he led Bulgaria in the entire tournament in scoring and then was up there, you know, posted – rebounding numbers that were, you know, admirable. Told he's a big time shooter from three, also a very good passer, is going to struggle to guard. And like most European kids, probably ain't the toughest kid in the world. I saw a Griffin McKenzie mentioned on the board. From what I'm told, more Dolman than McKenzie. But once again, you know, I don't know. He could step in and be the best player on the roster next year, or he might get splinters in his butt, you know, sitting on the bench. I don't know. Also, I don't know that he's going to go to Xavier. Let's be honest, if you're a kid from Greece and you're going to get pretty decent money to play next year, or he's from Bulgaria, but you're going to get pretty decent money to play in Europe or play in Greece, or you could go across the world to make no money and play in Cincinnati, Ohio. It's not an easy option.
Right. And that's the biggest thing. We really don't know. Obviously, there is some level of mutual interest for Mac to travel as far as he did, but there's no guarantees here at all that he's even coming to the U.S. to play college basketball. Dan, tell us sort of what was your first thoughts when you sort of read the brief scouting reports that were posted on the message board and your idea of what this would be on this team?
Well, my first thought was finally. I mean, how many times has Xavier gotten absolutely destroyed by European stretch fours in the past, like, 5 years in the A-10? It seems like every time I turn around. There's some other Nemanja Vidic or Mikic or whatever his name is, or Halil Kanasevic dropping in five threes and throwing passes from every angle. But really, I thought it was interesting because it is one area of the recruiting sphere that Xavier has not exploited. I mean, when you think through the years about international kids that Xavier has brought in, Ryan Sato is the most obvious one. I guess Churchill Odia would qualify as well, although he was here very briefly. But this is the first time X has really proactively gone overseas to pursue a player. So that adds a little bit of intrigue to it. As far as Vezenkov goes, I did a little bit of Google stalking, as you do, obviously with a player I'd never heard of. And I noticed that there was an article about him from the Pinewood American International School of Thessaloniki, which I guess is a American-run high school.
It's basically like Holy Cross, where I went. So,
yeah, more or less. Yeah. More or less. In Thessaloniki, Greece, which is actually the city where this Aris, the professional club that he's going to be playing – or that he's playing with right now is located. And this is an article from last May, and it talks about the fact that he – you know, it talks about some of his experience in international basketball, as Brian mentioned. But – I thought it was interesting that he had gone through this period of time studying at an American international school. So obviously his English is going up to snuff, and that almost indicates that it might have been a kid that was looking potentially to come stateside to go to school in the first place. But it certainly is a wild card, and it's tough to say. But if he is, given his height, given what you guys have written about the on the scouting report, it seems like the kind of guy that would be just what the doctor ordered for Xavier. You know, they had so much success over the years, X has, with forwards that can shoot, that can step out on the floor and shoot. And, one of the hallmarks of Thad Mata's teams and some of Sean Miller's teams was at times they would have five guys on the floor that could shoot the three. And that has not been the case under Chris Mack for the most part. So it would be nice to see a guy that has a little bit of that diversity in the game instead of doing, one thing really well, have a guy that can shoot a little bit, that can go inside, that can pass. So I think it's exciting, and it would add another piece to what's looking like a pretty fascinating Xavier roster for next season.
Well,
Dan, the one thing I would go in on that is Thad Mata loves shooters, and he recruited Dolman, he recruited Duncan. Since then, Xavier hasn't had a player like that, mostly because that's not Sean Miller. Sean Miller is a gorilla ball type of guy. Let's throw it up on the glass. Let's be tough and nasty and defend and go. CJ Anderson is Sean Miller. Josh Duncan is Thad Mata.
Derek Brown would fall under into that. Duncan and Dolman type mode, it would seem to me.
He got there at the, he became a good shooter and ruined the rest of his game and became a far worse player. But, Sean would love a CJ Anderson. Thad couldn't with a CJ Anderson. Sean really struggled with Duncan and Dolman to get them to do kind of like to be his type of guy. And Chris kind of inherited a roster and a recruiting cycle like that. He tried with Griffin McKenzie. Griffin just didn't work out. And I think he would like a stretch four. He just hasn't been able to land that guy yet.
Well, and the first thing I thought of when I heard sort of, what this kid's game was like is obviously I read on NBADraft.net, and from what we have kind of heard from sources is that he's not like a guy. He's not a true three. He's not going to be creating off the dribble or really handling it. He's more of just a face-up forward at this point and a spot shooter. I kind of thought, it doesn't provide a guy who can create his own shot necessarily, but at the same time, the thought of playing a face-up four with Samaje and with Miles would be very interesting on the court. If you have two shooters like that can really space things, a guy that can pick and pop with Samaje, it creates some options for this offense, and that's what they need, is more options.
And if they have, you're also going to have Stainbrook next year, which adds another dimension that Travis Taylor's done a really nice job, especially in league play, playing as sort of that post scorer. But Stainbrook adds a completely different dimension just because of his size.
Right. Oh, and his passing ability. I mean, I just mentioned those guys that can space the floor. They try to dig in or double down on Stainbrook at all, he's going to be able to find those shooters. He passes the ball really well.
Yeah, the other thing I would add, fellas, is I talked to Alan Huss, who – good friend of mine who's the coach at La Lumiere Prep in northern – in LaPorte, Indiana, one of the best schools in the country, one of the best basketball teams in the country. They recently played down in Florida against Brandon Randolph. And Huss is one of those guys. He played at Creighton. He's not going to give any high school kid credit. Never, ever. Like, if he says the kid can play a little bit, that means he might be an NBA All-Star. I asked him about Brandon because, you know, Josh Kershaw and Out West have been gushing about him. And I get worried about California kids because they don't play defense in California high school basketball. So I wanted to know what Huss had to say because they faced him. And he said, you know, Brandon was able to get into the lane at will, you know, can hit threes, was a little bit streaky, but said, you know, he's really good. And for Huss to say that a kid that he played against is really good, trust me, that means he's really good. So I think that's another option off of a guy like Samaje, a guy like D for next year.
Well, and that's very interesting, adding even another guard that can create off the dribble. And you talk about adding a face-up four into the mix. It just, yeah, it completely changes the complexion of the offense. And it'd be amazing to see how quickly this team could transform if things fall into place for them.
It's going to take time. I mean, you're talking five new guys that are going to be in the top eight, maybe?
Exactly.
I hope Xavier fans aren't stupid and realize that the team on Thanksgiving is not the same team that's going to be there on Valentine's Day.
You know, actually, it seems like most of Chris Mack's teams have followed that arc, for better or worse. Maybe this year is the first time the team sort of seems to be what we thought they were early on. But, you know, one other name that has been brought up for 2013 – Brian, and maybe you can weigh in on his recruitment, is junior Itu. What did we decide on that? A two.
I believe it's a two.
There's been a couple articles on Deadspin when they aren't talking about Lene Kukua, about Itu and some of the controversy that surrounded him in the greater DC area. Can you weigh in on sort of where he is, what's going on, and what your understanding is about Xavier's interest at this point?
You know, I think what Xavier's doing everything they can to try to land him, but they're not dumb. They know there's a lot of red flags. The kid, you know, how old is he? He's got a year of high school that doesn't count because he was at Arlington Country Day, which got decertified. You know, is the NCAA going to count his classes from the Congo? Are they going to count his classes from, I think, Nigeria? Like, there's just so much that's unknown there, and everything has to go right for him to get eligible. And I don't think Xavier's dumb enough to think, like, it's a shoe-in. They're still going to do their due diligence because bottom line is he's good enough to play at Xavier. He's good enough to be an impact player. But – You know, they also are realistic human beings saying a whole lot has to go right for him to get to this point.
Yeah, and I think the story there would be with Junior, if you're trying to follow this or are wondering what's next, I would say the thing about him is none of this is going to be cleared up for a while. None of his situation is. And so right now you can basically just look for anything else that's out there, like Xavier clearly is with Vezinkov and other people, and try to fill another spot if there is another player good enough. If you're not able to do that and you still have these scholarships available and you want to go ahead and try for Itu, once you figure out everything is good, then that's fine. But that's down the line, and really I don't think Xavier's just going to wait and see if any of this stuff comes back that it checks out okay, because really the whole story with Deadspin, like you mentioned, Dan, there's just so much going on here that seems fishy and might not necessarily be on the up and up.
Right. You guys mentioned potential other options for 2013. So we've got Vezinkov's in the mix now. Itu is in the mix now, but X has still got a couple of spots open for next year. We've mentioned some of the turnover. Any possibility of going a different direction, those two names? Anything else you guys are hearing at this point, or is it just too early to say?
I mean, I think a JUCO is always an option. Those guys, you know, it can pop up and it's a whole mess. A fifth-year transfer is certainly an option. And then, you know, the newest wave of free agency, the fifth-year transfer, and then also guys getting out of their letters of intent after a coach firing. I would say that's the most logical option. I personally think Xavier would be completely moronic to try to get a standard high school kid at this point outside of a two, because the kids that they could get, they're not getting Julius Randle. They're not getting, you know, Andrew Wiggins. The kids that they could get aren't going to be good enough, and they're just going to add to a depth problem. So I think it would be moronic to go that route. And I tend to think this staff is morons, though college basketball coaches surprise me on a daily basis.
Yeah, I agree with Brian. I don't think you're going to see any type of other high school prospects pop up. I mean, Samaje Christen was a guy who really kind of sprung up late in his final year, but that was also a kid that had to go prep school first. So unless there's maybe a rare situation like that, I don't think you're going to see any other high school guys. You're just going to have to wait for something to happen, as Brian mentioned. We hit on 2013, but finishing up sort of our recruiting chat here, Brian, 2014 is going to be a pretty big class as well for Xavier. When you look at this class, why is it going to be important, and what are some of the biggest needs in 2014 from your perspective?
14 is a big class, you know, numbers-wise, and, you know, for the program, you're looking, you know, you could potentially be having to replace Samaje. You're going to be having to replace Stainbrook in the very near future. So they've got to be on it and be ready, and it's just, you know, it's just one of those key classes because of how the numbers have changed in the last couple years. I think you great start with Melvin Swift. Great start, athletic, power forward, freak of nature, can rebound, block shots. I think they want a true center or something close to it, maybe a Sean O'Mara, a Pascal Chukwu type. I think they want a scorer in the backcourt, maybe a combo guard scorer, maybe like an Edmund Sumner, Jaquan Newton. And then I think they need two wings. They're going to need wings on the roster. That is clearly the weakest part of the roster, and it's not even close, and they know it. Everybody knows it. You know, Sam Logwood from La Lemire, athletic 6'6", becoming a good shooter, really can't dribble it with his left hand, so that's a concern. You know, you're looking at Justin Bibbs, who's a scorer originally from Dayton, now playing down in Florida. You know, he's certainly going to be up there. I mean, there are guys in the mix that Xavier's definitely looking at, you know, maybe a Tyquan Greer out of Chicago. I know they're trying to throw their name in with Vic Law, Trayvon Blewett. There's a whole bunch of guys that they're really going to try to work on. But I think you need two wings in this class, a scorer and another big to go along with Swift.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And when you kind of hit on the top guys already there, you know, you mentioned Sean O'Mara, a 6'9"-ish, 240-pound big man from Illinois. I mean, he's one of the guys that they're really pushing hard for. And can you just give us a little bit more on his game? I mean, he's another one of those guys with great feel, right, and that can really shoot the ball.
You know, I've seen him very limited. He plays on a smaller AAU team, so it's somewhat tough to know. But, you know, from what I've seen, he can score around the rim, you know, decent rebounder, you know, not athletic, but, you know, just kind of a savvy big kid. He's going to be 240, 250 pounds, will be kind of that, you know, what we would call a size guy in the middle. And since he can score a little bit around the rim and has a pretty good IQ, I think he's someone that they feel would complement Swift quite well.
Yeah, and I saw him up in the spring, or in the summer rather, at the same time Steele was watching him at one point. And the one thing that really stood out that I noticed is he's a tougher kid that really likes physicality. I mean, he's not in the greatest shape in the world, and that'll certainly help him once he gets to the college level. But a lot of time those guys who are a little softer physical-wise, you know, they're not as well put together, they tend to be a little softer on the court. But he plays kind of with a mean streak and really likes to be physical underneath. And I think that's definitely something that Xavier would like inside. Of course, you mentioned some wings there. Sam Logwood is definitely one of the guys they're looking at. Justin Bibbs, probably the most talented offensively wing that they're kind of seeking right now. And then another guy that I mentioned today in the Musketeer Report that they've sort of looked at, he's a versatile guy, a guy with some good upside, probably not quite good enough yet that they're going to offer anything, is Jordan Green out of Lexington, Kentucky. Plays for Louisville Magic AAU squad, which the staff has followed a lot over the last 2 years. So he's a guy on the radar to watch as well.
I wanted to throw a question out to you guys, because today, as we mentioned at the top of the program, is National Signing Day for football. And I noticed today, you know, as I was going around checking Twitter, watching TV a little bit, and complete wall-to-wall coverage this year, to an extent maybe that it hasn't been even in previous years. And I'm curious, you know, both of you guys have been doing this for a number of years now. And just if you had any thoughts on the explosion of recruiting coverage and how it's changed and whether or not you think it's had any tangible effect or change on the way that basketball programs recruit. And if so, whether you think that's a good or a bad thing. I mean, that may be a complicated question to ask, but just if you have any thoughts.
Well, I mean, obviously I wasn't in it before the recruiting boom, so I can't necessarily say for sure how it's changed things from that perspective. Can't say coaches have more information now than ever. They have more eyes. Coaches, you know, think about this. Anthony Davis had 25 Division I offers before anyone's ever saw him dribble a basketball. Think about that.
Before any coaches.
Yeah, coaches saw him dribble a basketball. It's just the way it is. It's made parents crazier, I can tell you that much. There's always been crazy parents. Now there's completely insane parents. So there's that. I mean, it's changed things, but, you know, recruiting in 1980 was different than it was in 1950, and recruiting in 2023 will be different than it is today. So I don't know that it's, you know, changed it differently, but you know, certainly there's a change, and that's just the way it is.
The one thing I would sort of comment on isn't exactly directly related to your question, Dan, but just sort of in general, is that with recruiting, we talk so much about, I guess busts might not be the correct term, but just how many misses that the recruiting rankings have. You know, oh, this guy was supposed to be a 4-star. I mean, we see it on our message board literally daily about how, well, I don't care about what he's ranked or whatever because this guy wasn't any good. Well, the thing that people put too much stock into is the numbers, the recruiting rankings, where we have a kid listed in the top 100, and then put all the blame on that as well when they're not any good. The thing about it is, it's just a piece of the puzzle. The recruiting ranking isn't saying that this kid is a surefire high major kid just because he's ranked a 5-star. It means he has all the tools, or there's reasons that he is as good as anybody in the nation, talent-wise, potential-wise, but there are a lot of factors that go into whether these kids pan out in college or not. And that has to do with coaching. It has to do with picking the right system for your game, going to a school that's going to utilize you the right way, taking care of things in the classroom, taking care of things off the court, you know, just in general, committing yourself to getting better and wanting to be the player that you can become. And I think that's the one thing that's kind of missed nowadays with all the recruiting buzz and the recruiting hype that we see online and on TV and everything, is that there's so much stock put into these numbers, and it's gone to the point now, really, you're hearing everyone talk negatively about it so often, is they were wrong because this guy didn't pan out. Or first of all, most of those guys, they're right on. Most of the rankings look pretty good when you really lay out who made it and who didn't. Yes, there's always going to be kids who weren't ranked and made it because either they didn't get seen early on, or their circumstances that they put themselves in at the college level, be it how they, which school they chose, which coaches they had, or how they worked, they were able to make themselves a better player than they ever were at the high school level. So there's a whole lot that goes into the success at the college level, not just the evaluations in high school, and that's not what the rankings are meant to provide.
Yeah, and also, Rick, I mean, Hashim Thabeet was the number 2 pick in the NBA draft. Every NBA team knew everything about Hashim Thabeet. He didn't work out. It happens. It's a projection. Everything's a projection. Also, there are three things that no person on earth can project how a kid's going to react to. One is beer, two is freedom, and three is females. Now, I know you two probably don't know any about the two of those three, but they can change people when they get to college, and we don't.
You're
know
talking about freedom, right? Or
yeah, because for the record, Snow is a legend when it comes to those three things. So I'm glad that we just got told off by our 5'9" national recruiting analyst about women, freedom, and booze.
I will tell you this: that 20 years ago or thereabouts, I remember reading a little bullet thing in the Enquirer because Xavier had pulled off a recruiting coup. This was before any recruiting ranking, because they had gotten the Mr. Basketball in the state of Delaware, and it was not Lenny Brown and it was not Gary Lumpkin. It was before that. It was a guy named Eric Edwards, and everybody was convinced he was going to be the next Tyrone Hill at Xavier, and he was about as good as you would expect. So the sophistication level has definitely increased. I will say that.
Yeah, no question about it. Well, I think that actually does wrap up our recruiting segment for real this time. You know, if you guys obviously have any questions about that type of stuff that you want addressed on the podcast, because it is a little bit different medium and we can express ourselves a little bit differently on here, and you want some recruiting questions answered, go ahead and submit those on the message board or on Twitter or whatever. Let us know, and we'll be sure to get to them.
So, Rick, I think now we're going to talk about this week's two games. Musketeers got a split again this week in A-10 play. Last Wednesday, hosting the Dayton Flyers, the so-called Jimmy Carter game. And actually, both of us were almost exactly right, I think. Final score 66-61. X took the lead on a Samaje Christen jump shot with about a minute left in that game. And there were all kinds of crazy incidents from there in that I'm sure we'll talk about. Then on Saturday, they went out to Richmond to play the Spiders. Very, very tight game for most of that one. And as we've seen in the last couple Xavier Road games, the Muskies fell away at the end and couldn't secure what would have been a really important win for them in the standings. So X stands at 12-9, 5-3 in the Atlantic 10, game off the pace of a couple different teams with two losses. The top of the A-10 is really bunched right now. X will be back in action on Saturday against or at Duquesne. I believe that game is actually at the Console Center, the new hockey arena in Pittsburgh, and then Wednesday at home to Fordham. So, Rick, your thoughts on it. Rick and Brian, you were both courtside at the Dayton game while I was in the cheapest of cheap seats. So why don't you guys that could actually see the game take place tell me what happened?
Well, let's be honest. Your vantage point had nothing to do with why you couldn't make out which of the three players were actually dribbling the ball while you were watching that game. But that being
I would also add your cheap seat ticket cost more than me and Rick's combined.
There is no doubt about that.
Xavier in this game, Dan, it's exactly what we said they needed to do. Out-muscle, out-toughed, as Coach Miller put it, the Flyers. I mean, they were the toughest team on the court for all 40 minutes. It started from the tip-off. They were extremely physical on the glass. They were great on the offensive boards, which they needed to create some more offense. And they killed Dayton in second-chance points 35-10. They got plenty of paint touches. I mean, they didn't knock down shots, which we didn't really expect them to do. It was exactly the game plan that we sort of thought they needed to play out, and it did. I mean, they did everything we said they needed to do, and it worked out for them in a five-point win.
There were a couple things I noticed from this game, oddly enough. Jeff Robinson was one of them. I thought he had a really nice game for the Musketeers, 6-12 from the field, 5 boards, 12 points, played 31 minutes, kept himself out of foul trouble, played good defense. You know, we've talked about it all year. Jeff Robinson has good games. The Musketeers win. When he doesn't show up, it's marginal. So I thought that was a big addition for the Musketeers. Also, Isaiah Fillmore had another really productive game coming off the bench. I believe he had 8 points, made all 4 of his field goal attempts, 4 rebounds while he was in there. But, yeah, as you say, anytime. I mean, they out rebounded the Flyers 36-18. I mean, Dayton had 8 defensive rebounds the entire game, which is it's almost unfathomable.
I haven't seen that in a Pee Wee game. 8 rebounds defensive? That's unheard of. I have no idea how that happened. It's impossible to me.
Well, and it just speaks to the level that, you know, again, I hate the cliches, they wanted it more and all that stuff. No, Xavier just took it to them. I mean, from the start, inside, Xavier made it clear that they wanted no piece of banging inside early in that game, and they just took it to them.
Well, really, Dayton needed Matt Derenbecker to hit a couple quick threes early in the game just to stay in touch, because X was really making them work on the offensive end and limiting them to one shot when they got the ball to the glass. So, I mean, it was a very good start for X for it being a rivalry game. It was a good start. You know, it's just the nature of this team that they're going to have a couple scoring droughts during the game that are going to prevent them from building a 15-20 point lead. But I thought X did a pretty nice job in the first half of this game, staying on top of the Flyers, really, really making them work offensively, and then scooping up every loose ball and rebound.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the single thing that stood out to me is the job that D. Davis did on Kevin Dillard.
Yep, I was just going to say that.
You know, Kevin Dillard is the best point guard in the league. With all due respect to Samaje, Kevin Dillard's been there. He's been through the wars. He's the best point guard in the league. And he got a couple threes in the second half. Well, you know, you're not going to shut a guy like that out. D did an unbelievable job. The negative would be in the first half when they had a chance to blow it open. Not only did Justin Martin apparently forget that Matt Derenbecker, all he can do is shoot, they had like four possessions in a row that set back basketball about 50 years. From Brad Redford just seemingly giving the ball to V. Sanford to Eric Stenger throwing one of the worst passes I've ever seen in my life to Landon Amos turning it over. I mean, like, Dayton got four layups in a row. Like, Mac didn't even have time to call timeout. Like, the guys just right. turned it over. It,
right,
and
actually
can't do that.
That was something that I had sent a very profane text message to Rick during the game.
It's true.
Because it happened at the 8:08 mark in the first half. It was 19-12. X was up. Just coming off, I think D had split a pair of free throws or something like that. And X did something that they've done quite a bit this season, which is when they're approaching that media timeout, they'll get a lot of their starters out to give them a more extended break. So you saw Amos and Stenger and Robinson all come into the game. Redford in the game. So the five on the floor at that point were Redford, Amos, Kristen, Stenger, and Robinson. One of those five guys can dribble the ball, and it was just a nightmare. There was Redford turnover, Robinson turnover, Samaje turnover, Stenger turnover. I mean, it was just and by the time they got to the media timeout, all of a sudden the lead had evaporated. It was really unbelievable because they couldn't finish plays. They couldn't draw fouls, and they were giving up these what Rick and what the staff call pick six turnovers. And so the media timeout never came. And so it was kind of it was just one of those things where, you know, Coach Mack has gambled successfully with that strategy quite a few times in his tenure. But that particular time, it blew up at his face.
Well, and Snow mentioned D. Davis's play on the defensive end, and really – it was D. Davis's play on both ends of the court because he was aggressive. He hit a big open three, had a big and one at different points in the game. I mean, he had some huge buckets. And not only that, but I said in the pregame, it was going to be important that he kind of kept pace with V. Sanford. Not that they were matched up against each other, but just from the aspect of you figure Samaje and Dillard are both kind of going to lead the teams in scoring. You figure they both have a secondary score. And you kind of think, they're going to need, you know, D. Davis is going to have to match what V. Sanford is going to produce because Xavier's not going to outscore him anywhere else. And if V. Sanford puts up a big game, which he did, having 16 points, Xavier's going to be in a lot of trouble. D. had 14. That was a big deal. So his play on both ends of the court, I thought, were crucial in that game. And obviously, you can't talk enough about what Jeff Robinson did in that game as well that you already hit on, Dan.
Yeah, and Travis Taylor, I mean – and Jalen Robinson, one of my guys, loved the kid to death. But Travis Taylor absolutely punked the Dayton centers. I mean, Josh Benson might as well have stayed on Edwin Moses Drive. I mean, he was a flat negative. Jalen gave Dayton a little something, but, I mean, Travis Taylor really punked them on the glass. And despite not scoring, what do you have, like 12, 13 rebounds? I mean, that was worth mentioning.
No question. Well, obviously, that was a big win for the Musketeers. And the other thing, you know, you talk about this streak so much. It comes up so often, and it's like, you know, does that type of stuff really matters? You got to say, there's a lot of pressure, and none of those seniors want to be the group to lose that game and end the streak. So I you can't tell me that doesn't have something to do with it at this point with what we've seen year after year from Xavier seniors in that game. And Jeff Robinson, a great example once again.
Brian, that's something I'd like to hear you weigh in on is sort of what that to the extent to which, because obviously fans and alumni, they talk about that streak all the time. You know, how much does the team think about it, talk about it, concern themselves with it? I'm sure it's not something that is front and center the way it is, you know, when fans are trash talking or alumni of the schools are trash talking, but it's got to be at least out there, right?
There's only one game per year that Xavier cannot lose. That is, they can lose to UC. People don't want to hear that, but they can. They can lose to Wofford. They cannot lose at home to Dayton. And the coaching staff, they know that's the one game. You know, I remember I was reading, you know, Season on the Brink, and Bob Knight hated, I think it was Bill Frieder at Michigan. And someone asked, it might have been Dan Dockage, like, you know, what about this game? And he just said, there's some games you're better off not losing. and that's the case. I mean, like, losing is not an option at home against Dayton. And I'm going to tell you, it wears the head coach Xavier out. Brian Gregory was so mind blown. I'll just say mind blown by the situation. Like,
good catch.
He freaked himself out about the thing. It just wears on the Xavier coach too. I mean, like, you don't understand. Like, those guys, you cannot lose this game. It's like nothing else during the season. It's even though it's not that important, even though it's not as big a rivalry as Cincinnati, you can lose to Cincinnati. People understand that. You cannot lose at home to Dayton. If for no other reason, then you just can't be that guy.
I do hope that Brian Gregory hasn't bought any real estate recently in Atlanta, given who his new boss is.
I will refrain from commenting on that.
All right. Well, that's a good time to move on. Of course, you already mentioned the next game on the slate, the road loss at Richmond. Another close game on the road comes down to the final possessions. And this was a little higher scoring of a game, as we predicted, Dan. Played just up at the low 70s. Xavier, once again, just can't get it done on the road when it comes down to those final possessions. But this one, a little bit different for Xavier, mainly from the standpoint that obviously they have no chance of winning games without this guy. I mean, it's tough to blame a loss on him. But Samaje Christen was kind of the one that played like a freshman down the stretch and in stretch cost them at the end of that game.
Yeah, with Samaje, he went through a stretch earlier this year where he couldn't make a free throw at all. He went through a stretch where he could not make a layup, whether contested or uncontested. You know, they worked through him on both of those. He started off the game 6-for-7 from the foul line. Then he missed two in a row. And you could just see, like, he's not mentally tough enough quite yet to be that guy when things are going poorly. And it just snowballed on itself, and he finished the game going 1-for-6 from the foul line. I mean, it's just what it is. It's life when your freshman is your best player. It's not ideal for a reason.
And you mentioned the fact that, you know, you saw it snowball, you saw the look on his face, you saw his body language, and it played itself out in other areas of the game, too. I mean, he had a couple just terrible fouls, untimely turnovers, and then obviously the misses from the line. I mean, you're exactly right. It's just a flat-out situation where a young guy hasn't been through it yet and is a little mentally weak.
I mean, and I know people don't want to hear it, but it's not like he doesn't practice them. And it's not like he doesn't make them in practice. And it's not like Chris Mack woke up yesterday morning and said, man, you know what? We should have practiced free throws this year. He works on it. It is what it is sometimes.
What it is it's sort of the baseball thing, because everyone looks and they watch baseball and they see a fat turd like John Kruk out there hitting 300. And they think, well, I mean, if a fat guy like that can hit 300, so can I. So I've got more room to complain about these guys. And, of course, as Rick says, every person on a message board or sitting in the stands shot 90% for their CYO team. I mean, but I thought this has been a season where, despite the fact that X has played at seemingly a similar level in almost every game this year, with a couple exceptions, they've done some things this year that I never thought I would ever see. One of them was I'm gonna completely fluff which game it was, but they out-rebounded a team by 20 and they lost. And in this game, they shot 60% from the field and lost, which is remarkable to me. But you know, this was a game that just got into such disastrous foul trouble in the first half that they were always sort of patching holes for the rest of the game. You know what I mean? There are just games like the Temple game. Bring up the Temple game. When D went out with the wrist strain in the first half, it felt like X was living possession to possession because they were trying to find ways to get Samaje rest, to have enough ball handlers on the floor. It felt like we're going from minute to minute, from media timeout to media timeout, just managing instead of attacking. And this game felt the same way because of the foul trouble. Because in the first half, the officials, for whatever reason they chose, called everything. And it's funny that the hockey game was playing instead of the game, because I think that the hockey players were actually getting away with that if those refs had been calling that hockey game, everyone would have been in the penalty box within about 90 seconds. So, you know, it wasn't a great night for Fox Sports Ohio. Let's just throw that out there right now, I guess, to begin with. But, you know, this was just one of those weird games that it's just – and it's so frustrating to see the Muskies lose a game like this where they shoot 60% from the floor. They're obviously having good offensive sets, and they just didn't finish. And it's been a problem we've seen all year. I mean, the only A-10 road game they've won this year was because Samaje Christen threw in a miracle shot at the end to beat St. Bonaventure. And in each of the three games since then, Charlotte, St. Joe's, and now Richmond, the Muskies have put themselves in a position to win and not been able to close the deal.
Winning on the road in college basketball is extraordinarily difficult. I mean, I'm watching the TV right now here as we're recording this, and the UC Bearcats went down at Providence. Winning's not easy on the road. It's just not.
Yeah, it's really not. And when you look around the A-10, obviously that's been pretty clear this year, as there's been really no rhyme or reason to why teams are winning or losing and who they're winning or losing against. So the line continues to get blurred in college basketball between the top schools and everybody else, just because there are so many kids that grow up playing the game. There are so many good players out there. And there are so many things like weight rooms and conditioning programs and all that are so high level across the board. We all know the same stuff now. All the information is available, that everyone tends to, if they want to put the work in, have the chance to be a pretty good basketball player. And I think that's why you continue to see the line get blurred more and more.
So this week, the Muskies play maybe the – well, I don't know if they're the two worst teams. I guess they probably would be the two worst teams in the league. Maybe you throw Rhode Island in that mix, but Fordham and Duquesne. You know, this is not a glamorous week. There's not a whole lot to talk about with Duquesne. Mostly we talk about not having T.J. McConnell there,
which sucks. And
with Fordham, we'd talk about how Chris Gaston has wasted his college career. But I mean, any thoughts from you guys on sort of a general basis? You know, X has lost three of their last four games. Any thoughts? Have you guys, since the beginning of the season, which I think was the last time we talked about the big picture with this team, has anything changed for you guys as far as your evaluation, or do you still feel like pretty much you got it right at the beginning of the year? Now, obviously, Snow got it right, but Rick, this is more based for you.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. Appreciate that. Xavier, to me, has overachieved in a lot of senses. But we've also come to sort of find out exactly what they had. And we didn't really know that before the season, who, you know, if guys like Justin Martin and D. Davis, how they were going to play, if Travis Taylor would even step up. I mean, there was a chance that Travis Taylor was the same guy he was last year, could never make the jump to this level of competition possibly, and they'd really be screwed. But that hasn't happened, and he's been really good. So, end of the day, I look around this conference, and yes, there are – It's the conference is better than I expected it to be, for one, but I still think Xavier's a top five team in this conference. And if they're not, they're like sixth, because there's very little separation between 1 and 10, basically, or 1 and 8 or 9. And Xavier, from what I've seen, when you talk about the GWs and even the LaSalles who they've played and Charlotte, Xavier's is good or better than a lot of those teams, especially with how hard they play and the way they defend.
Yeah, I mean, like, this team's a little bit better than I thought they'd be. And, you know, that's not necessarily a good overachieving as a college coach. That isn't necessarily a positive, because that means people don't think you have good players. I'd almost much rather underachieve than overachieve, because three quarters of your job is bringing in the horses. But, you know, this team I do think has overachieved some, and they're a good team. You know, they've lost the St. Joe's game being an outlier, because that was not a 10-point game or whatever it finished up. But, you know, they've lost all their league games by like 3 points. You know, it, that means they could win all the rest of them. I mean, I wouldn't bet on it, but they're in every game. That they're they've got, you know, usually when they step into the gym, they got the best player in the gym. So, and you've got the two worst teams in the league coming up, and then you've also got Rhode Island coming up. So three of your next four against the worst teams in the league. And you're 5-3 right now with more home games coming up. I would feel really good.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing, is that it sets up to where these next three games, Dan, if you want the preview, because you're right, the two teams they play this week do suck. There's really nothing to talk about as far as personnel goes. Xavier flat out should win these games if they play as well as they're capable of. But I think they need some momentum. I think they need to win one or two of these games by 10 to 15 points or more.
Yeah, I mean, that four-game winning streak at the beginning of A-10 play was the first time X had gotten any momentum rolling all year since the first week when they beat, you know, the Fairleigh Dickinson JV team, Butler and Robert Morris. It was the first time they'd really strung together more than two wins in a row, and they did it. The, you know, the LaSalle game got close at the end again in garbage time, but they did it in a really commanding fashion against LaSalle and GW, who are two pretty good teams. Now, the schedule hasn't done them any favors. Their home schedule in the league is backloaded. They have four straight home games at the end of February, and they played six out of eight. They're in the midst of playing six out of eight on the road. But, yeah, I agree with you 100%. The next four games are at Duquesne, home to Fordham, at Dayton, at Rhode Island. And I mean, obviously, that Dayton game is going to be very difficult, but all four of those games, they should have a chance to win. And if they could build a little bit of momentum heading into that huge end of the season stretch with VCU, UMass, Memphis, St. Louis, and then at Butler, it would really put them in a pretty good spot to end the season on a high note and to head into the Atlantic 10 tournament with a good seed.
Everyone keeps asking me what I think about the at-large chances and them chances to get an at-large bid. I really wouldn't worry about it. I mean, it's going to be tough to win out or win, you know, all but one of these games left on their schedule. They could do it. I wouldn't worry about it. The thing I'd look for as a Xavier fan is the fact that they've proven that they can play with anyone in this conference, and Xavier's been pretty good in the Atlantic 10 tournament when they need to be. I'd be looking for signs of improvement and signs that this team can string some momentum together and go on a run and hope that they can do something like that when they get to Brooklyn.
Maybe as our last topic today, we can just go around this group and talk about what we're looking for. You talk about improvement over the next eight, nine games headed into Brooklyn. What specific guys or what specific aspects of X's performance you're really looking for improvement in?
For me, it's, will Justin Martin ever make a shot again? Because this team needs Justin Martin, Jeff Robinson, and Isaiah Fillmore. They need two of the three to play well. And it would be great if Justin Martin could make a shot again. He did the first month of the season, hasn't since then. If somehow he can find a way to do that, this team, I wouldn't pick them to win the league tournament, but they're going to have a chance.
Yeah, I agree. When you look at this team, I think Isaiah Fillmore is a huge part of this because his minutes are going to continue to increase. He's going to get those minutes at the five, guarding other teams that have a bigger five. And he is a guy, again, who I've been saying all year, has some upside offensively. A lot of these other guys, they are what they are right now as far as being role players. I mean, a lot of them either aren't ready or at this point in their career, they just are a role player, and they're probably not going to be more than that. And obviously, I'm talking about, you know, guys like Jeff Robinson who can really help you, but at the same time, you can't rely on him. Isaiah Fillmore is a guy who can be a somewhat reliable scorer. He hasn't been 100% health-wise or back to his playing shape that he'd like to be in until well after Christmas, in my opinion. I think he's starting to finally get there, and he's starting to play with a little more confidence, which he just, frankly, didn't have most of the year. If he continues to play better, that gives them a huge boost.
For me, it's three guys, and it's similar to what we actually talked about on the last show, Rick, talking about guys who are trying not only to make strides to make this team better this season, but also to crystallize their roles next year. Because as we've talked about, there's a ton of talent coming onto this roster next year. Will all of it be immediately ready to step in? No, but there's
a
couple guys.
Competition.
Absolutely. And so the three guys for me are Isaiah Fillmore, who has played, who has really improved in the last 2 weeks, and I'm hoping to see more from him as things go forward. Especially because I think X has gotten past playing some of the better big men in the league, and hopefully he won't have quite as many shots jammed down his throat in the second half of the league schedule as he did in the first. But I think he's a guy that could really step up for him. Justin Martin, as Snow said, you know, the great enigma, I guess, the, you know, no one knows what you're going to get from him on any given night. And we thought that corner might have been turned at the beginning of the season. He started out scoring double figures, what, 7 out of 8 games. And then since then, it's just been drifting the same way that Martin has really always played. There'll be games where he's really up for it and he'll be very aggressive on the glass, but his shot has been really nothing since probably the Vanderbilt game. And as a result, he's been limited. And I also would like to continue to see improvement and more consistency out of D. Davis. You know, he's obviously cemented his place probably in the starting lineup next year, I would think. And he's going to be a big part of next year's team. But I do think that he has to continue. One thing I liked about the Richmond game is he was a little bit, and the Dayton game was he was a little bit more assertive from the outside. I'd like to see that continue. And I just like to see him continue to be kind of a steady hand on the tiller for these guys and take some of the pressure off Samaje. That's really going to be his role that next year, even, because Samaje is obviously the best, the most talented and the best player in the program. And he's going to be the alpha dog for this team next year. So, you know, I would like to see those three guys continue to, well, Fillmore and Davis continue to increase their roles, and Martin, you know, determine what his role is going to be.
Yeah. Well, the one thing I'd say about D. Davis, if there's anyone, in my opinion, who should not be confident about their minutes next year, it's D. Davis. And it's not necessarily the fact that he's not going to get his chance or he's not going to play, because he certainly will. But with Brandon Randolph and Miles Davis being available, Samaje is not coming out. I can tell you that much. And you've got two guards who can score it entering that mix with you. So if I'm D. Davis, I'm trying to leave an impression on the rest of this year, showing these coaches why I was a winner, why I was brought to Xavier in the first place, and give them something to remember of, like, remember what he did for us down the stretch in March? That's why he's our guy going into this year. And that's why I think if I'm D. Davis, I want to make sure they feel that way heading into next season.
Yeah, I mean, D's got that. And D did a little bit of that, you know, at the end of last year. Like,
exactly.
You know, the minutes he played against Notre Dame and, you know, the way he kind of changed that game with his
Even
defense.
Baylor.
I mean,
oh, yeah, he was Baylor. Huge against. He was absolutely huge against Lehigh too. Came in and hit two huge threes in the first half when they were struggling to keep their head above water.
I would say, you know, that is key is how D's going to play, and I have all the confidence in the world in D. I know he's a message board bashing waiting to happen, but D does a lot of things really well.
Yeah, he does, and he's only going to continue to get better. The biggest thing with him being his strength, obviously, as he continues to fill out that upper body and gives himself a little bit more core strength to hold guys off, I think it's only going to help him, and we'll see a little bit more of the creative side of his game and the offensive skill set that he brings to the table. Well, that basically wraps it up, unless either one of you two have anything semi-intelligent to add.
Rick, I wanted to wish you a wonderful weekend down in the Florida Keys. I sincerely hope that a hurricane doesn't enter the picture in the next 48 hours.
The James Brooks edition of this Dana and Victory podcast, only available on MusketeerReport.com. For Dan and Brian Snow, I'm Rick. Thanks, everyone.